Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
The year for Corja, August 40th. Welcome to Capital Irish on 106.1 FM. You have tuned in to our regular Sunday morning slot. And we come every Sunday from the capital here in Wellington and bring you news about Ireland and stuff that's happening in Ireland. But we particularly like to bring news about people who are involved in Irish stuff here in Wellington. Now, it's with great and deep sadness that I bring you the news of one of our chief sponsors, Peter McGuinness, who died on Sunday last. Now, Peter lost his battle with cancer after fighting a very brave battle for a couple of years. But he's one of Wellington's icons, he and his family from LT McGuinness. And I just think it would be appropriate for me just to start even by reading his obituary, because it tells it all. It says everything about the man. This man was larger than life, a man who was about 6'6" and with a great laugh that you would hear the other end of Wellington if he was laughing at one side of it. Great sense of humour. Incredible philanthropist. Anyhow, I think that the family have stated it best of all. Peter was born in Wellington in 1947, and he was the son of Laurie and Kath, and he passed away on Sunday, the 26th of November, surrounded by his loving wife, Susie, and his seven children, Beth, Claire, Lauren, Sean, Chris, Kate, and Kelly. He was blessed to have 10 grandchildren who adored him and 3 loving brothers, Jim, Brian, and Mark, along with their amazing families. He had many, many friends and acquaintances and will be fondly remembered within the Wellington construction industry. And it goes without saying, he enjoyed a full life. He was the foundation member of LT McGuinness, along with his father and brothers. He was a strong supporter of many Catholic schools and churches within the Wellington region. And he was a proud member of the Hutt Old Boys Marist Club and the Bowling Club. He was an active member of South Packard Club and a founder of and patron of the Rye Haven Charitable Trust. He was a generous contributor to many charities and societies within the Wellington region, and many will remember Peter as a big man with a big laugh and a heart who found more joy in giving than receiving. We were truly blessed to have him in our lives. That was written by his family. Now, Peter and Susie are our sponsors and have been very generous in not just with sponsoring Capital Irish, but just including us in many of the other things they have sponsored along the way. And last year, Peter was inducted as an honorary fellow of the New Zealand Institute of Building in 2020. It was an honor that was limited to 10 construction leaders in the country. And Peter, with his engineering background and high degree of confidence in his ability, was instrumental in setting up or in the success of LT McGuinness. His adage of good people build good buildings, underpinned with the number of high philosophies attending to detail, emphasis on health and safety, and a continual drive for quality and doing what you said you would. So Peter, of course, joined his father's company, which his father set up 70 years ago. And Peter said that his father was the inspiration for his career. He provided a solid foundation for the company, and he acknowledged that the support of his brothers, Brian and Jim, over his career in the family business made it a very satisfying and brilliant career. So that's just a little bit about the man himself. He was particularly loved in and the Lower Hutt community, but in the Wellington community, and indeed the business has gone to Auckland and all around the country. So we give our deep, deep condolences to Susie, his wife, his rock, as they called her today when they were at the funeral. And and to his 7 children, who are just like himself. They are very gregarious, beautiful, beautiful family, really lovely. And I'd like to play a lovely song as a tribute to Peter, and it's by Glenn Hansard, who came to Lore Hut some years ago and played this beautiful song at a concert that we all went to. It's called The Parting Glass.
And of all the money that e'er I spent it in good company. And of all the harm that e'er I've done, alas, it was to none but me. And for all I've done, for want of wit, to memory now I can't recall. So fill to me a parting glass, good night and joy be with you all. And if I had money enough to spare, and leisure time to sit a while, there is a girl in this fair land who surely has my heart beguiled. With her long dark hair and ruby lips, she surely has my heart enthralled. So fill to me the parting glass, good night and joy be with you all. And to all the comrades that e'er I had, who might be sorry for my going away, and to all the sweethearts that e'er I've loved, who would bid me one more day to stay. And as it falls upon my lot that I should rise and you should not, so raise to me the parting glass, good night and joy be with you all. So raise to me the parting glass, good night and joy be with you all.
Thank you, Ray, for playing that beautiful song, The Parting Glass. And as I said, it was dedicated to the memory of Peter McGuinness. May he rest in peace. Now I'm coming to you from Capital Irish at 106.1 FM. I'm Alice Paul, and we come every Sunday to bring you bits of news about Ireland and Irish things happening in New Zealand. And of course, we're here thanks to our sponsors, as I mentioned just before. Susie and Peter McGuinness are one of our great sponsors, Hutt Valley Irish Society and the Irish Trust. So we're very privileged to be able to broadcast to our community because of these generous sponsorships. So I haven't been here for a while. I've been away in Ireland for a few months and in Sweden, where my son got married. And it was the most beautiful trip, and Ireland was looking amazing because we went there in the month of August and most of September. And I tell you, without a lie, it only rained about 3 days. So it was glorious weather. Every day we got up, we kept waiting. Oh, there's going to be a change in the weather, and there never was. It was just fantastic. And everybody seemed really happy, and the vibrancy around all the small towns was just buzzing, and all the different languages being spoken in every village and every town. And it just, it's a beautiful new Ireland. I love the buzz there. And I think that the influx of all the refugees from Ukraine and other countries have given it a real character that's, it is being celebrated by the majority of Irish people, despite the problem in Dublin a couple of, last week where there were some riots. And of course, it was that's such a small 0.1% of the population who have some radical views. And thank goodness they're few and far between. But we spend most of our time down in County Meath, a beautiful spot near Slane, called Rathkenny. And that was, it's a very picturesque, very historical area, beautiful. And then, of course, to my hometown, Carrickmacross. And again, Carrickmacross has changed so much. It's hard to believe it's the same place that was dull and grey in the 50s and 60s when I grew up. And it bears no comparison to that now. Beautiful houses all around the place and shops that sell all sorts of things. And it's really, really lovely. But one place that I did visit and we did a tour of was the workhouse, the old workhouse in Carrickmacross, Chocnamiocht. So I want to just tell you a bit about the workhouses in Carrickmacross. There were, of course, many workhouses in Ireland. They were built at the time of the famine, around the 1840s, between the 1840s and 1850s. I think I read that there were about 130 built there during that time. But most of them are in a dilapidated state. They're restoring a couple, I think one in Donegal, one down in Cork, and this one in Carrickmacross. And just really, they have done a fantastic job to it. So you can go there for tours, 45-minute tours, and the tours are conducted by a few people who are very passionate and have great knowledge about the area and about the whole thing about workhouses. And I was very lucky that a friend of mine, Bernie Ruth, used to be called Bernie Marn, she conducted the tour. And her understanding and great historical knowledge, as well as her beautiful empathy about the workhouse, just made the place come to life. And there wasn't a dry eye in the place, really, by the time she was finished telling us. I'll just tell you a little bit about the background. As we know, in the 1840s in Ireland, the population was nearly 8.75 million. Now, think about now, it's back up to 5 million. When I was growing up, it was 2.5 million in the 50s and 60s. So now it's we're taking you back to 1840, where it was 8.75 million. And at least 2.5 million of those people were destitute, primarily because of unemployment and resulting in evictions by landlords. Now, the Carrickmacross workhouse was one of 130 workhouses built throughout Ireland. And it was to house the poor and the homeless. And it was called the poor house. And even when I was growing up, people referred to it as the poor house. But you had to apply for admission to the workhouse or the poor house. And the successful applicants had to surrender their land to the landlord before entering. And you were called an inmate the minute you entered. So, for example, if you couldn't pay your rent on your acre or half acre, and, you know, the potatoes were, there was a blight, so there was no food. You had no choice if you had 5 or 6 children or more, as they did in those days. So you had to give back your little bit of land to the landlord and apply to become an inmate with your family. And they were subject to a very strict regime. Families, the minute they went through the door, were segregated and forbidden from seeing each other without permission. And their diet was a meagre, I think porridge, she was telling us, and something, you know, gruel, as they used to call it. There was no heating, of course, and the place is very, very cold. Even when we were there, you could feel the coldness in it, with the big block walls, and there was, it was it wasn't a very pleasant looking place. So they've kept some of the rooms exactly as they were. And there were deliberately harsh conditions, which meant the workhouses quickly became known as the poor man's jail. And people only applied for permission to be admitted there as a very last resort. It was like that or death. So in the 1880s, after three centuries of confiscation and evictions and plantations and colonization and penal laws, approximately 95% of the land belonged to England and to the Anglo-Irish landlords, as with the Irish as their tenants. And the tenants had, as tenants, they grew massive quantities of agricultural produce and livestock, which they had to sell to pay their rent and avoid eviction. This left the majority of the native population solely dependent on potatoes for food. They were the cheapest to purchase and they could be grown on small plots of soil. So, and also, so potatoes are very high in nutrition, luckily, but certainly, you know, to 1845 when there was a blight, there were no potatoes available then to live. Consequently, there was the Great Famine on Gurt the Moor. So the blight, it wasn't just in Ireland, it was right across Europe that the potato blight struck. And the British government sent at least 14,000 additional military to Ireland to protect the thousands of tons of other vegetables and grains and animals from being exported by landlords for profit. So the Irish people had no way of getting their hands on any of this food because the British government had sent all these military to protect it. And that resulted in desperation. And yeah, so, I mean, it was quite sobering, the whole thing of just learning about this. I mean, we knew about this history, but seeing this workhouse in your own town and realizing that actually, you know, some of our forebears would have ended up there. Absolutely, no doubt about that. And there was death, there was emigration, voluntary assisted emigration from there as well. The Lord Shirley, who owned all the land around our area in County Monaghan and Carrickmacross, he, up until the week we were there, would you believe this, his family was still receiving rent from one side of the town of Carrickmacross. Now, that must seem crazy to hear that, but it's absolutely true. And the courts have ruled against him receiving or their family receiving any more. So for the very first time in that history, now those rents are being dropped. But anyhow, I think I'm talking a bit too much and I think we should stop and have a piece of music. And I was thinking that one of the bands that Peter McGuinness really supported was Grather. Jerry Paul, my son, and Alan Doherty and all the group. You know, when they came to Wellington, Peter McGuinness was always very supportive of them. In fact, Jerry and Alan did a little tribute, played a little track for him and sent it to him when he was very unwell a few weeks ago when they were out here. So I want to play a lovely tune called Out on O'Tackie and again dedicate this to Peter's memory. Oh, Thank you very much, Ray. That was Grother, Up on Otaki. Lovely, lovely tune. You're listening to Capital Irish on Access Radio, 106.1 FM. I'm Alice Paul with you and bringing you some Irish news about when we went to Ireland for our big trip this year. We went away for 3.5 months, mainly to Sweden for 6 weeks, and the rest of the time to Ireland. We went to Sweden because our son Steve and Maria got married there, and it was absolutely beautiful. Sweden is nearly as nice as Ireland, in a different way, in a very organised way. Ireland's ruggedly beautiful, I say, but Sweden is just really gorgeous, gorgeous. And the people are lovely, and they love to hear about New Zealand. And we have a very good relationship, New Zealand and Sweden, so that's nice. So I bring you a little bit of Swedish news every now and again too. And they've got snow at the moment, poor them. It's thick on the ground, and we got a little video call last night because our little grandchild turned 3 yesterday, and my son Steve said she woke up with an attitude. So that's a good thing for your 3rd birthday. And she was in the snow, brushing the snow off the car. Anyhow, we went off to Ireland for the rest of the time, and as I said, we got nothing but good weather. Great hospitality. We stayed with my sister Eileen and her husband John, and the most beautiful place you can imagine, Rathkenny, near Slane. Just gorgeous. But went down to all the family in Carrickmacross. My sister Anna introduced us to all sorts of cultural things down there, one being the tour of the Carrickmacross workhouse, Chocht na Beacht. The poorhouse. And I was absolutely horrified, actually, last week when I looked at some of the 1911 census forms online just to get the names of some of the relatives. And it was the one from Castle Blaney, and they had some people there who were in the workhouse, and they put underneath the workhouse lunatics and idiots accepted. Can you imagine the terminology? It was just frightening. Lunatics and idiots. The poor people were losing their minds from hunger and from losing their children and their relatives dying. And these were the workhouses that they were had to resort to, and that was how they were named. So in Carrickmacross, there was a room for lunatics and another one for all these other names that they call people, but they did separate the mother, the women, the men, and the children. So that was quite a harsh, harsh thing for the children, not seeing their parents again, often never, because in some cases. And of course, I would really recommend to anybody going on a trip to Ireland to try and get in on one of these tours, because it brings a new dimension to what I'm talking about, to just see those rooms and see the little uniforms that children used to have to wear and see the little trunks that the clothes were put into. On Gortha Moor, that's the Great Hunger, proved a watershed in Irish history, permanently changed the demographic of Ireland, political and cultural. So within 10 years, from 1941 to 51, 1 million people had died of starvation and disease. 1 million emigrated primarily to America, Australia and Canada, some to England. And mass emigration continued, of course, for decades. So one of the things was, due to the large number of children in the workhouse that were orphaned by the Great Hunger, the English government Secretary of State for the Colonies, Earl Grey, you'll remember that name from the tea, he devised the Pauper's Emigration Scheme. So under that scheme, over 4,000 Irish orphan girls between the age of 14 and 18 emigrated to Australia and other British colonies as the wives and servants of settlers and convicts there. So the research that's been done discovered that there were 19 of the 38 orphans from Carrickmacross who travelled to Australia. And they did a lovely history on this lady, Rose Sherry, from Carrickmacross, whose photograph was there with her husband and all her children and her grandchildren. And yeah, she was one of the lucky ones probably to survive. Anyway, Ray is telling me I've only got a couple of minutes left. And I'm going to take that opportunity to thank you all for listening to Capital Irish all during the year and to say a very, very happy Christmas to you all and have a safe Christmas. And I especially want to mention a very dear friend who used to present this programme, Bernie Breslin. Now, Bernie's not well and he's so much in our thoughts and we love Bernie dearly and we're very... very lucky to have had him on the programme for a number of years here. Great musician, he made his own instruments, but he has had Parkinson's disease and Parkinson's is not easy when it progresses. So keep him in your thoughts and your prayer. But I feel that, you know, we're in good hands with all our presenters and our great technicians like Ray, who's with me today. And I wish you a very, very happy and great new year. I'm going to finish off with a little poem. And it's about custom in every Irish household would have coming up to Christmas, that they used to have, rather, where they put a light in the window. I remember doing it ourselves out in the country. And here is how the poem goes. Brush the fire and clean the hearth and set the fire to keep. For they might visit us tonight when all the world's asleep. Don't blow the tall white candle out, but leave it burning bright, so they will know they're welcome here this holy Christmas night. Leave out the bread and meat for them, and sweet milk for the child. They will bless the fire that's baked, and too the hands that toiled. For Joseph will be travel tired, and Mary pale and wan, and they can sleep a little while before they journey on. They will be weary of the roads, the rest will comfort them, for they must be many a lonely mile from here to Bethlehem. Oh, long the road they have to go, and bad the mile with the good, till the journey ends in Calvary beneath the cross of wood. Leave the door upon the latch and set the fire to keep, and pray they'll rest with us tonight, when all the world's asleep. Happy Christmas, everybody. Slán agus beannacht.
You've been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, thanks to the generosity of our sponsors. We couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.